It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff,
the Mayor of Auckland City. Hi, Phil.
Hello, Mikey and Sarah. How are you?
Well, good, thank you. I mean, I wasn't invited to the Thousand Kiwis Government House Waitangi reception with the Prime Minister.
Oh, that's really...
All you highfalutin fancy...
You, Mikey.
Dudes.
Look, we knew you didn't have a suit and we didn't want to embarrass you.
That's too hard. I have things to do with my nephews and nieces anyway. So yesterday you hosted Dame Patsy Reddy, Sir David Gascoigne, and the Prime Minister. And were you there as well? You were considered one of the hosts.
I was there. That was my third event for the day. I started off at Okahu Bay, and a beautiful morning it was too.
Beautiful,
and hosted by Ngāti Whātua with the help of council, and really good. I spoke at the Pōwhiri there, and I talked about the struggle over Bastion Point, which I remember from my young days as a student going up on Bastion Point in 78. Yeah, I went up with the guy that later became the first, the founding Prime Minister of Vanuatu, Walter Leni, Father Walter Leni. And I just remember the atmosphere up there and going into the corrugated iron shed and talked about their struggle and talked about how they've really turned their fortunes around. They, with the help of the Treaty of Waitangi Act and the Amendment Acts, so that they're now building houses for their people, putting money aside for trust funds, for education for their kids, they're creating jobs for their people, they're managing their commercial assets really successfully. And in some ways, Ngāti Whātua is the, sort of the poster child for what iwi can do when there is a settlement of genuine and historic grievances, and they can start to turn their future around. And that's what I think we want. So that was quite a nice theme to start off Waitangi Day. But the other part of it was just, the number of people down at Okahu Bay that were non-Māori that were there celebrating, people of European descent, Korean, Chinese descent, and everybody there celebrating New Zealand's 178th birthday and nationhood.
Yeah.
And that was kind of... That flowed over also at Hauani Waititi Marae, which I went to as well, out the west. We had 30,000 people there. And it reflected what was happening at Waitangi itself, where, we all were usually, you just go, oh, God, Waitangi, there'll be another bloody fracas there. Somebody will throw a dildo. Somebody will throw mud. Something will be there that the media will seize on. And what do we get out of our celebration of being Kiwis? We get... God, all we do is bloody, throw off, complain, focus on things that are wrong, and you shouldn't sweep those under the carpet, but you should celebrate what is really good about being a New Zealander, that we live in a stable, peaceful country where generally we've got a lot of prosperity. We're starting to address, I hope, the issues of inequalities. So there's a hell of a lot to celebrate, and that mood took place at Waitangi too, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting because there was some actually amazing... There's amazing reports coming from Waitangi, but it was, I think that what was happening at Waitangi was obviously unique this time, but there is a different feeling in the country that would appear to be sort of all over the place as well. Like you say, it's apparent throughout every part of the country, and it's got to do with also as far as the attitudes towards the way we treat women, stuff like that as well. Just an inclusiveness and genuine equality and genuine lack of prejudice or elitism and that sort of thing. Maybe did you feel a wee bit of that?
Yeah, no, I certainly felt that, and to give credit where it's due, I think the Prime Minister has led that out. Just a different attitude and the government's on its honeymoon. And honeymoons are always fun. It's nice when people are nice to you.
Don't discount the good times, though, just because they're on a honeymoon.
I kind of got a bit of a sense just watching what was happening around the country and going to all these events in Auckland that people were looking at it differently. I think changing from the lower to the upper marae in Waitangi was good. There were some silly things that were starting to happen there. When they said to Bill English, well, you can't come up here unless you give your speech in Māori. Well, that's not very inclusive. When they said to the media, oh, well, we're going to charge you $10,000 to cover the national event here. People get pissed off with that, and I don't blame them. it kind of looked all over the place, whereas the Upper Moriah is always the serious place where, you know, things of national importance happen. And I just think getting the government and the opposition to go on together, I thought, look, it's like, you know, yeah, we've got an adversarial system in Westminster-style politics, and so, you know, we pick holes at each other. But there are a couple of days where maybe we should just celebrate being New Zealanders. Anzac Day is one of them. Nobody asked what a person's politics were when they were they died on behalf of their country on the battlefields of Europe or Asia. And maybe Waitangi is a day where you say, look, government or opposition, yeah, we've got our differences, but we are together New Zealanders, and we want to do something really good for our country. So I think there was a bit of that mood. Stephen Joyce was saying that he thought, you know, the new format was a good format, and having the opposition on with...
Well, any day without getting a sex toy thrown in the face of Stephen Joyce is going to be a boomer, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. That was kind of a bizarre incident.
So the thousand people that were invited to Government House yesterday, how were they invited? How did that all work?
Mixture of things. They have they usually have it in Wellington, but sometimes have it in Auckland. So they invite MPs, they invite some people from the locally councils and boards. They have the diplomatic corps is always there, including the ambassadors that come over from Australia. But then they have a wide diversity of Auckland as well, and I think somebody told me that they are balloting some of those positions.
Sure. Okay.
So I met with I went there thinking I'll go there for an hour and I'll get surrounded by diplomats, but actually I stood in the one place and talked to about, you know, I'd say maybe 120 different people that came up and talked, and they were largely people from Auckland, different walks of life, you know. Good chance to come and have a chat about what they thought was, you know, up in Auckland and what should happen. And, you know, it was a really, really good discussion. People from the Defence Force were there. I thought it was a pretty good occasion. And I've got to say, I really rate our Governor-General. I think she's down to earth. I think she does her job competently and well. And I quite like the concept of not having an elected president, having a governor-general. They yep. might or might not be called president if we become a republic one day, but just having a person that's not there because they are a political and elected person, but a person that can be a symbol of unity in the country, that's kind of non-political in most senses of the word.
Let's talk a wee bit about the week preceding O Waitangi, especially the terrible flooding out at Piha and the Waitakere's there, and the fact that Auckland apparently has 137,000 buildings prone to flooding.
Yeah.
What?
That's... you know, that's not unusual for cities around the world. Why is it not unusual? Because what connected people transport-wise in the old days was, you know, the fact that you had to have travel by sea. So most cities in the world are built around the harbour and around the rivers, and they are by definition most often on low-lying land. And, you know, I saw what happened with the King Tide back at, you know, January 4th, 5th. I've been spending much of the last couple of weeks actually going around different parts of the coastline, talking to communities about, you know, how it hammered them. And, you know, I was out at Maraetai, and I don't know whether you know, there's a couple of... Maraetai's a lovely beach, a really beautiful part of the country. They've got a couple of restaurants, cafes, shops that are... just almost, you know, less than a metre above sea level. And they got hit by the King Tide, and as the King Tide becomes more and more common, as sea level rises, those sort of shops are going to find it, and the houses that are next to them will find it harder and harder to get insurance, which means they're going to have to relocate. Because
they're going to come crying to the council, aren't they? What do we pay our rates for? You save us, council, save us from the incoming tide.
Yeah, I don't think anybody expects the mayor to be King Canute, and if he was King Canute, it wouldn't be much help anyway, would it?
The council must have some sort of what would you call it, like a you know, like a model.
A model to how the
flooding would, how, and you know, the same way that we say that it's our stormwater drains overflow and the beaches all go filthy, then the that we must be aware that this, there is a situation like you know, the figures from Piha, where the highest one of the dudes there said that it was one of the rangers there said it was the 30 years, it's the fastest and most furious flooding he's seen in 30 years. You know, that's
okay. Two issues. Let's deal with the global warming and the sea level rise. There's two strategies that we've got. Three strategies. The first strategy is, what can we do to lessen carbon dioxide going into the atmosphere? And that's where we're on about our electric cars, our million trees program, trying to find promoting sustainable building and all of that sort of stuff. The second is mitigation, because no matter what we do now, there's still going to be some sea level rise. And the two things that we've been talking about around the coastlines is, sometimes you can put up a seawall, which will stop erosion, but you can't always do that. And sometimes if you tried to put a seawall up, it would just look grotesque, and it would get smashed anyway. Some of our reserves that we've built around the coastline have been infill, so we've put spoil there. That's true of the whole of the CBD down the bottom of the town too. And sometimes there's, you know, obviously there you're going to have some sort of protection. But on beaches around the place, sometimes you're just going to have to recontour your coastline and accept the inevitable that unless you're going to build dikes like in the Netherlands and probably ruin all your beaches because you have to build these massive big seawalls along the place, you're going to have to make some adaptation and adjustment. So there'll be some places that have to be relocated because of it. Coming back to what
is deforestation to an extent any part of the problem?
It's part of the problem with erosion. Obviously, if you've not got good coastal coverage of trees, or the right sort of trees, you know, a pine tree and a macrocarpa tree isn't going to help your erosion because they're shallow rooting and they blow over and take the cliffs down with them. A pahutakawa tree will make a big difference. And there are things like we're experimenting with, like vetiver grass that, you know, is about a metre high above the soil and about 2 or 3 metres deep below the soil that can help hold on. So that helps. Better drainage to stop the heavy rainfalls that we're seeing more of with climate change again, actually acting as a lubricant and allowing the cliffs to slip away. So we can do that sort of thing. On the drownings that happened over at Cascade Falls,
tragic, eh?
Sympathy goes out to the families of those two young men from Massey High, Mitch and Sosi. But you know, they could not have anticipated the rapid rise of the river, and I don't think anybody else could. And you know, I want to acknowledge the families of those two young men, but also the people that helped, Westpac helicopter and the council park rangers that were there and doing everything they could. I passed on my congratulations to our two park rangers, one involved in the Awhetu drowning and the other involved with the Cascade Fall drownings. And I got a really nice reply back, and you know, just saying how hard it was to be there, you know, desperately trying to help and to witness the tragedy that was occurring in front of them with the families there. Yeah, really, really tough for everybody that was involved with that, to have lost two young men like that.
Hey Phil, that's us for this morning. But nice to know that you did do that. That's very, very thoughtful of you, and our thoughts go to those families as well. We'll speak to you again next week, and I'm going to talk to you about your $20 million funding boost for the art gallery proposal.
Hey, thanks, Mikey. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank
all
you.
The best.
Bye-bye.
For the week. Cheers.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goth.